This is Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Now here's today's program. This is Faith in Action on Catholic Radio. I'm Jim Ganley. Our co-host is Bridget Ayer. And Bridget, we are at the time of the year when everybody listening, at least I hope everybody listening, will be getting a letter, or maybe even has gotten a letter from Catholic Radio. Summer months, not only for Catholic Radio, but for almost every not-for-profit, for every charity, are tough. Yeah. People go on vacation, the kids are out of school, there's lots of things to do, and sometimes charitable giving just kind of, you know, is one of those things that nobody intentionally stops. They don't, it's not that they don't want to do it anymore, they just kind of forget about it, and that happens to Catholic Radio as well. So each summer we send out a letter to everyone in our database, very simply asking you to send us a contribution to help us stay on the air. We are listener supported. Our two sources of revenue here are mainly listener support. The other one is the business underwriting that you hear the announcements for on the air. That's it. That's how we stay in business. That's how Catholic Radio stays on the air here. So we do need your help. If you got a letter, please read it. Please respond to it if you can. If you didn't get a letter, you can go to our website, CatholicRadioIndy.org, and just click on the donate button there, and you can make your donation that way. But we do need your support. If you can help us, we would greatly, greatly appreciate it. And Bridget, this is your first time interviewing this guest. It's not my first time. Our guest has been with us quite a number of times, really.
Yeah. We have with us Sandra Measel, who is an author and a speaker and a church historian. We'll give you that title, right? With all your many, many writings, welcome to Faith in Action.
Well, thank you very much, Bridget. Thank you for having me.
And we were just chatting just before we got started here that I was really excited to have Sandra because she has a perspective that I don't feel that many people in our culture today really have, because people don't really know history the way that you know history during the medieval time. Mm-hmm. And that really has such a bearing on what's going on now. Even though it was a long time ago, history makes difference.
Yes, it does. And history is being so poorly taught. Anyone who has formally studied history gets pained when you hear how people who just got average history in high school and college were taught. It's not about dates, people. It's about the experience of human beings in the past. And if you tell it through the stories of human beings in the past, it's fascinating. And you know, other people tell me, oh, you know, I thought history was so dull. No, it's not dull.
It's super exciting. I'm kind of a history nerd, and my husband's a history nerd. But, you know, I really don't know that much about medieval history. And we're also going to talk about the Reformation. So yes. First, tell our listening audience a little bit about yourself. Did you grow up Catholic? Have you always been a writer? Give us a little bit about your background.
Well, I've always been Catholic. For some reason, people often think that I'm a convert. But no, I've always been Catholic, and I lived through the crazy years after the council and all that. But a significant difference between me and most of the other Catholic writers active today is that I had all my Catholic formation before the council. So I got the old-fashioned
Baltimore
treatment.
Catechism?
Yes, Baltimore Catechism, but also the kind of things that we had in college religion. And the general environment of those days was so very different, and they're not coming back, but they were very different.
How so?
Well, for instance, the ideas of types and figures in biblical interpretation that I got in high school were exactly the way someone would have been trained in the Middle Ages.
Okay.
And nobody knows what types and figures are anymore, which are prequels, symbols or persons or things in the Old Testament that reflect back to Christ in the New Testament, like the Paschal Lamb.
Mm-hmm. And so that's very valuable.
Yes.
in understanding so much about our faith and about Scripture.
Yes, and it's also extraordinarily useful in art history, because the symbols that they used, you know, they change and they develop over time, but there is a richness in the traditional symbolism that you don't get when you're staring at one of these horrid modern resurrexes.
Mm-hmm. Which, now, tell us a little bit about, so did you learn about art history in college, or were you trained as a writer? What did you study in college?
Well, I was a chemistry major.
Okay.
And
God had a plan, right?
Obviously, because I wasn't when I found out when I went to graduate school, I wasn't a very good chemist. I have a master's in chemistry from the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, and I'd taken all the courses necessary to get a PhD in chemistry, and then I couldn't pass the qualifying exams.
So how did you get into writing in history and medieval history?
Well, I thought, since I'm here for a few more years when my husband is finishing his degree, I'll just switch over to the history department because I like history.
Okay.
And it was so easy. People wrote in English and not in equations. And I could take down every word that the professor said, and I really enjoyed it, and I was very good at it. And then when my late husband graduated and we came to Indianapolis, he used to work for Eli Lilly. I continued reading in history, and because I was used to writing papers, I began writing for science fiction fanzines, which are amateur publications. I was also a science fiction fan from the time I was a little girl. And we got
You were writing fan fiction.
It's
different. Okay.
Fanzines don't necessarily publish much fan fiction.
Okay.
They publish articles on anything you want, even on the correct way to eat an Oreo.
Okay.
So I became active in science fiction fandom, and I met authors and I met editors, and the authors that I liked me, and they liked what I said about them, so they recommended me to the editors, and I was invited to write articles, critical type articles. And then I was invited to write fiction, and I did write a science fiction novel. I also published six short stories in science fiction. And then, because I had met a lot of neo-pagans in the science fiction field, I knew a lot about that. And the National Catholic Register ran an article on neo-paganism, and I wrote a letter to the editor, and I said, there's a lot more to be said about it. So then they invited me to write.
If you're just joining us right now, we're talking with Sandra Measle, and we're going to try to get to the Reformation today.
Yes, we may. We'll say a few things about that.
But you just mentioned a term that neo-paganism.
Yes, yes. Those are people who practice Wicca and other forms of pagan religions that worship many gods and goddesses. There's possibly 100,000 of them in the country.
Now, people still do that today.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, they certainly do. I mean, I know people who do this. I talked to one last night.
We could have a whole show on neo-paganism.
Yes, you can.
We?
Yes, I wrote about that for Crisis Magazine a number of years ago, which you can find. The Pagans Next Door, I believe, was the title. You can find a lot of my things by simply Googling my name and seeing what turns up.
So,
I haven't gotten to the Catholic writing.
Okay, get to that.
Quickly. Okay, as a result of doing that, I became a featured writer, consulting editor, whatever they called us in those days, at the Register, and I would write a lot of articles for the Register, and then I wrote for the Register's sister paper, Twin Circle, and then when the Da Vinci Code came out, I was invited to write about the Da Vinci Code, which I loathed, and then Carl Olson, who had also been doing that, who's a much more experienced Catholic writer than I, invited me to collaborate with him on a book, and the rest is history, and we became famous, and we got on TV, and we traveled around, and I absolutely detest the very name of Dan Brown to this day.
Well, let me ask you this. I have different friends who say, you know, history really is irrelevant, and it just drives me crazy when people say that. So why is history important? And why is church history important?
We have to know where we were to know where we are now. The present state of the Catholic Church developed over 2,000 years. It is good to see how other generations faced their issues, what they decided about their issues. But as far as history being relevant, don't you think the history of the American Revolution and the writing of the Constitution are important to us today?
Absolutely. And there would be people that say, well, not really, you know, just because they don't value history.
Well, it matters what kind of a government you have.
It
and
sure
we
does.
Still have the government that was described in the Constitution. Art history was my hobby just because I like art. And I read a great deal of art. I only had one formal art historian course in when I was at Bloomington. I did a further study of in medieval history at Bloomington, and that was an incredibly boring course on Byzantine and early church architecture, which curiously became valuable and earned me money as a basis of articles on how we design churches. How did they decide what was a good form for a Christian church? So there's a lot more to it. And when people tell me, oh, why do you study medieval history? Nothing happened then. Oh, don't you think the formation of universities and parliaments and the rights of people to change their government are not important? Those were decided in the Middle Ages. The development of Catholic doctrine was greatly elaborated in the Middle Ages. So I read,
A lot happened.
A lot of big things happened
that we're, you know, benefiting from or impacted today.
Yes.
Give me the time frame of the medieval time. I get mixed up when I try to figure that out.
Yes, because also the periodization has changed.
Okay.
Historians now like to talk about ancient times, that's the heyday of the Roman Empire, and then late antiquity, which is the declining years of the Roman Empire. So the first one would run from, oh, say, 200 BC to about 200 AD, and then late antiquity is the declining and troubled years of the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire falls officially in the West in 476. The period from 500 to 1000 is thought of as the Dark Ages. From 1000 to 1500 is the Middle Ages, which are often divided into early, high, and late. There is this desire to break things down into categories that, like, if history were beetles, we're classifying them very precisely. And we now know that there is enormous local variation in any of these periods. What was going on in Italy in the year 1000 is not the same as was going on in Iceland in the year 1000.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to take a break, don't we?
And all of those areas were much more isolated at that time. Today we're so used to a world community that if anything happens in any of those countries, everybody knows about it, everybody kind of feels involved in it, but
yes.
That's a good point, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, thousands of years ago, 1,500 years ago, those were different worlds almost.
Yes, I mean, people did travel, but it was difficult and dangerous and took a very long time to communicate from one end of Europe to the other. Could take months. Anyway, I am interested in everything pertaining to history. My specialties would be church history, history of everyday life, and history of the family.
So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the Reformation. Mm-hmm. Stay tuned.
Think of all the media our young people are exposed to today. MTV, movies, what passes for entertainment on TV, song lyrics that are questionable or worse. Where do they hear the message that it's okay to be chaste and modest, or that it's not crazy to practice their faith, or to believe in a God who loves them and can forgive them no matter what they do? Catholic Radio is the answer. Be sure to tell your friends and relatives about Catholic Radio Indy.
Ever since we've been on the air at Catholic Radio, we've always wanted to have billboards, but they just don't fit in our budget. And since you'll probably never see a real billboard for us, I'm going to ask you to do something, to imagine one. In your mind, picture a large, empty billboard. Yeah, that's it. Now pick a background color, any color at all. Okay, then across the top of your billboard, put just two words, Catholic Radio. Make them really big. Then below that, in even bigger letters, put 89.1 and 90.9 FM. Wow, that's a great billboard. Now, if this billboard were real, all of your friends and neighbors could see it, and they'd know all about Catholic Radio. But since it's only an imaginary billboard, we're going to have to depend on you to tell your friends about Catholic Radio. Remember, Catholic Radio 89.1 and 90.9 FM. Oh, and by the way, nice choice on that background color. It really looks good.
Welcome back to Faith in Action. I'm Bridget Ayer, and I'm here with my guest, Sandra Measle, and we are talking, we are going to start talking about the Reformation. And Sandra wrote a really very fascinating article in the Catholic World Report about the Reformation. And I read it the other night, and I was so amazed by how much I learned and how much was going on simultaneously. And then it wasn't really, I kind of pinned the Reformation on Martin Luther. And that's not really exactly accurate. Could you expound on that? And the other thing I want to make the point of is that Catholics don't need to be afraid to look at history of the church, because it really animates and articulates where we are today and how we can continue to move forward as one body of Christ in terms of unification. That's my goal.
Yes. Well, for instance, a lot of things that happened after Vatican II have an eerie parallels to the way the Reformation swept over Europe. But I'll get back to that in a minute. When I was deeply immersed in medieval history, history kind of faded out for me in 1500. I didn't know much about the Reformation either, the basics. But when I was at Indiana University, I had the opportunity to study with Gerald Strauss, who was one of the diamond spurred honchos of the field, and had exposure to the good new work. I've even seen some of these guys on a panel, and one is in awe. But what a lot of people, Catholics and otherwise, don't realize, that in the past 40 years has been a fine era of good history being done on the Reformation, looking at it in new ways, looking at it without partisan sniping of the Catholic writers trying to stick it to the Protestants and vice versa. No, they don't do that. They try and tell you what they see in the past as well as they can. We cannot ever recover the past, but we can see it a lot better as time goes on because we're looking at it with new tools. Now, some of the new good work that's been done, in fact, that because of the Reformation anniversary in 2017, mm-hmm. A lot of academic publishers rushed things out. And the best one, if you really want to learn, is Carlos Era Reformations, The Early Modern World, from Yale University, 2016. And he's a Catholic.
And when we podcast this, we will we'll put the link or some further reading on up for that.
Yes.
So people can get that. But yes. Go ahead, Sandra.
But I highly recommend Carlos Era. He's Cuban, he's a practicing Catholic, and he teaches at Yale. Well, what these newer writers have shown is different ways of looking at the phenomena, looking at different kinds of records, looking at how did the common people respond when their elders and their superiors were making high policies in religion. Well, it was all very unhappy for the common people, I'll tell you. We know that the Reformation is not one thing. It is a cluster of things going on over a period of about 100 years, and it has its roots deep in the Middle Ages. And also that the course of the Reformation in different parts of Europe was quite different. You know, everybody knows Henry VIII broke with Rome and set up the Anglican Church on his own without very much input from anybody else in England, who were quite happy to be Catholics. In Germany, every place is its own little statelet, and they all have different policies, and some of them are ruled by prince archbishops, who are both the head of state and the head of the church. And these were often arrogant, aristocratic men who didn't necessarily even live in the diocese, but they were taking the revenues and squeezing as much as they could out of the people in monasteries, own towns, and so forth. In Switzerland, you have independent cities who vote on whether to join the Reformation. And other places, the kings don't want to get involved with Protestantism, so they don't let anybody become Protestant, as in Spain. Occasionally, Protestants were executed in Spain, or suspected Protestants. And it's all a mosaic of different things.
Would you say, though, while all these different things were going on, would you say that Luther did kind of open up the floodgates of maybe all these different things going on, with things that were going on in the political realm, people,
yes,
things that were going in the religious realm, things that were going on with the common people, their feelings of faith? So,
yes.
But would you still pin it on, pin it on Luther in terms of opening up the floodgates of the Reformation to kind of, that was,
yes,
kind of culminating?
He lights the spark. As one of his predecessors, Erasmus, who stayed Catholic, we'd call him a liberal Catholic, he said, "I laid the egg that Luther hatched."
Mm-hmm.
And Luther also is a tremendously dynamic, charismatic personality with a terrific gift for writing and speaking. If he had been a little scrawny, mumbling sort of fellow, a lot of this wouldn't have happened. But you have the classic big, strong German with the big chin jutting out in defiance at the papists, and a brilliant writer. He translated the New Testament into German, and very vigorous German that affected the German language the way the King James Bible has affected English.
So let me ask you this. Was Luther right? That is the question that I have.
Yes, that's a very interesting question. Luther was right to be indignant at abuses that he found.
Absolutely. And I think most Catholics would agree.
Yes.
We can all agree that abuses of a position,
yes,
is wrong. It's simple. It's a sin.
Yes, yes.
He called out sin.
He did indeed. But his personal problem was feeling forgiven and put in a state of grace by God.
He was had a scrupulosity
He
issue.
Had enormous scrupulosity. He should never have been allowed into a religious order. He had foolishly made a vow in a thunderstorm, "Oh, help me, St. Anne, and I will become a priest." Well, they shouldn't have taken him. And he belonged to a reformed and very zealous religious order, a reformed Augustinian order. And it wasn't enough. He worried constantly. And his solution of salvation by grace alone, by faith alone, by the scripture alone, was what solved his problem.
Right. And then it caused a ripple effect, you know,
yes,
for all of human history.
Yes, it did.
Which still hasn't been quite figured out.
Yes, yes. And once you shatter the calm, and once you get political patrons to enforce your new ideas, the cat is out of the bag. And he is copied. Calvin is a contemporary of his in France, and Calvin has a very different theology than Luther. And some of Luther's ideas are not believed by modern Lutherans,
mm-hmm,
like man has no free will.
So let's go to a couple. Catholics need not be afraid to study this. We only have about 4 minutes left. I can't believe how fast this has blown by. But could you recommend some readings? Give us,
yes,
some tools to study this for,
yes,
ourselves.
Yes. Well, if it's reassuring to people, a lot of these new good scholars are Catholic. I had mentioned Carlos Ira, but also, that's E-I-R-E. I'm probably not pronouncing it right, but the good Catholic historian of England is Eamon Duffy, who has studied how the people reacted to Henry VIII, and it is a very, very sad story. You have Brad Gregory, who teaches at Notre Dame, a recent book, The Unintended Reformations, which shows how Reformation ideas have continued to shape the modern world. J.A. Scarsbrick, who wrote a fine biography of Henry VIII, Christopher Haig, English reformations, that there were different phases of the English Reformation.
And your article, too.
Well, okay, my article is in Catholic World Report. Google my name, and my name
Sandra
is spelled
Miesel.
M-I-E-S-E-L, rhymes with diesel. Google my name and Reformation, and you will pull it up. But there's a lot of really good stuff out there that is firmly anchored in the record. Please, heaven forbid, you should read Hilary Belloc. He didn't know what he was talking about, and he was just doing it for polemical purposes, to stick it to the Protestants.
Now, let me ask you something real quick about, there's a book called Triumph, which I hear is really good. Are you familiar with it? It's like 1,200 pages, and it's all about church history. Father Richard Doar, I guess, read it a while ago, and he had...
Written by whom?
I can't remember who the author is, but it's Triumph. It's about good things that the Catholic Church did.
Yes, well, it's nice to talk about the good things that the Church did, because we often forget those, but it also did some bad things, and you want to have an even...
Absolutely.
...and balanced perspective on church history.
So what's the way forward in 2 minutes? You have a solution?
That the Reformation is a really interesting, if occasionally heartbreaking, subject, but it shaped the world that we live in now, and it behooves us to read about it. I will make up a list of some good books that they can put on the website of Catholic Radio, and I hope this will be of use to somebody in the audience.
I'm sure it's been a use. It's been a use to me, and I really would recommend reading Sandra Miesel's article on this topic in the Catholic World Report, which is actually a very good publication. I was impressed that you were published here. I was like, "Woo, that's pretty cool." But yeah, Google Sandra Miesel's name and check out this article. I think it'll be very, very helpful as a background.
And spell your name one more time, Sandra, for people.
Miesel. It's like diesel with an M. M I E S E L. It's the German pronunciation, which trips people up, but I have clung to it faithfully for 54 years.
Well, thanks so much, Sandra, for being my guest today. I feel like we didn't cover half of what we didn't even scratch the surface, but it's a start, right?
Yes. Thank you very much for having me.
God bless you and your work.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a presentation of Catholic Radio Indy. You can hear this episode of Faith in Action again, or any past episode, at CatholicRadioIndy.org. If you have a suggestion for a guest or topic for a future program, please call us at 317-870-8400 or email Jim at CatholicRadioIndy.org.